Welcome to our podcast, Conversations About Student Mental Health. I'm Chris Leonard, clinical social worker and educator working with children and adolescents for over 30 years. In this podcast, I talk with school administrators, educators, clinicians, and parents to open a dialogue that will help the growing number of students struggling with mental illness. Hi, everyone. I'm really excited to introduce my guest for this episode, Dr. Michael J. Hines, superintendent of the Port Washington School District on Long Island in New York. We'll be talking about preparing staff for the challenges of the upcoming school year, while also getting insights into Dr. Hines' secret sauce for helping students get the most out of school. In addition to serving as Port Washington superintendent, Dr. Hines is a Fulbright specialist, an associate professor of education and leadership at both Long Island University and Stony Brook University. He's also a public school advocate and has done extensive work on organizational learning at Stony Brook University, Harvard University, and even in Finland. Dr. Hines' mission is to spread the message of the importance of a holistic approach to educating children. He has shared his ideas in articles, keynotes, and on the TEDx stage. I can't wait for you to hear his ideas today. Dr. Hines received his undergraduate degree in psychology from Bethany College and his doctorate in educational administration from Dowling College. He's been awarded the Friend of Education Award and Distinguished Leadership Award by Phi Delta Kappa, as well as numerous other awards related to leadership. Good morning, Dr. Hines.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's great to have you on with me.
It's an honor and a pleasure, and I appreciate this very much. Thank you.
I'm so glad. So let's jump in. The past school year has been a rough one for so many schools across the country. In the media, obviously, and in my personal conversations with school staff, I keep hearing about staff shortages, burnout, acting out behavior, increases in school violence. And students and staff are just overwhelmed and struggling to adjust. They've had a hard time with the reopening, and it just continued through the school year. It's been very difficult. So before we even address the upcoming school year, I wonder if you could share a little bit about how you and your school teams handled the challenges that you've faced in the past year.
Boy. First and foremost, we're still recovering from last year. It was, you know, my 25 years in education, last year was by far the hardest in every sense of the word, physically, mentally, socially, spiritually. And I think the first step is really acknowledging the fact that it was difficult. But the good news is we got through it. We got through it, albeit there is certainly, like any boat that goes through the water, there is a wake that's left behind as we have gone through that. But there's also a lot of learning, Chris, that has taken place too. If there is any silver lining, that's really hard to say with anything that's as tragic and terrible as this pandemic has been, is the real focus on mental health for students and staff. And so where it was always in the outer periphery in some ways, you know, it was always academics and then sports or vice versa, depending on what district you're in. And then maybe mental health at some point. But now it really is in the forefront, I think, in a lot of superintendents' mouths and certainly boards of education as well. So that's the good thing. So the question then becomes, you know, with relation to last year, what did we have to contend with? We contended with everything, like every school district. There are a lot of absences, not just because of COVID, but because staff, including myself, just needed a break to stay home, to regroup, to recalibrate. And that is the theme this year when it comes to what are we looking to do this year. The theme is come together because we've been so apart for the past several years. You know, schools, as Ken Robinson would say, it's an organic system, and it's been incredibly inorganic over the past several years. I mean, it's all about relationships, and relationships in many ways, we haven't had the ability to flourish with relationships because of everything that's taken place. So last year was about getting to the finish line all in one piece, which I think we did, thankfully so. And now it's giving us permission, I guess as Mark Rackett would say, permission to feel in a lot of different ways and to understand that we need to rely on each other. That is incredibly important as we move forward.
Wow, excellent. You quoted one of my favorite people, Ken Robinson. I love that. It was a 1996 TED Talk that he gave on schools. And I've referenced that talk so many times over the years. The other thing I love that you mentioned is relationships. In my own experience as a school leader, I was always talking about relationships first. Relationships first. If you don't have that relationship, you're not going to get anywhere. And we were so cut off from each other for so long, and we already had problems with attendance in many schools. We had a problem with kids coming to school. And some kids just became very comfortable at home. They said, hey, you know what? This is working for me. I like this. This is great. The microwave is right here. The fridge is right there. This is cool. Why should I give this up? There was just this resistance to coming back. And then there was just all of the chaos that people experienced. And it became exhausting for teachers and administrators who just felt tapped out. And they were coming back with their own recovery, their own sense of, hey, you know what? Being at home wasn't so bad. I got to be with my kids. That was nice. And so the adjustment for all of us was just huge. So as I hear you pointing toward the year ahead, you're talking about relationships. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit more on that and how you see that playing out with your team this year.
Sure. So, you know, I love the fact that you agree. Relationships, it really begins and ends with relationships. If you don't have that, it's impossible, especially within the school system, to move anything forward or to educate kids. So first and foremost. The second thing is, you know, if you don't take care of yourself, it's very difficult for you to serve others. And so, you know, many of us really have struggled and definitely are continuing to struggle taking care of ourselves, whether it's physically and or mentally or in any other way. And so we have to be aware of that. We have to embrace that. And we have to acknowledge the fact that we have students, we have staff that still need extra supports. Just because in schools, you know, the fact that we're going back to normal, whatever that is, we cannot lose sight of the fact that we have a lot of rebuilding to do. So to be specific, we have our first day of school for our staff on the 31st of August. And if any of the staff members are listening right now, they're probably not happy to hear that because they'll be here before they know it. And, you know, as I said before, the theme is come together, and we are going to make a concerted effort, especially on that first day, as we welcome everybody back, is to reinforce the fact that we want our staff to take care of themselves so they can be the best version of themselves, whatever that means. And I'm going to actually ask our staff to try something that's new or different, something that's audacious that they've never tried before, that in the sense of being selfish and taking care of themselves, trying to really do something, whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whether it's to meditate 10 minutes a day before they come to school, whether it's to enter a race in some capacity. We want to push people to try things that are new and different that, again, will be good for them and then be good for our kids. And the second thing is we want to really reinforce the fact that we are all one team. Yes, we are a pretty large school district, at least for Long Island standards, but, you know, serving close to 5,300 students. But the fact of the matter is we need to, and we will be figuring out ways to become more intimate, you know, to even though we have seven different campuses for our schools, how do we look at making it one, and what can we do together to make that happen? Because again, that's been taken away from us very abruptly as far as being a team of two, as opposed to a team of seven or silos everywhere. And I think, you know, Chris, that schools, not to be condescending, but they've been thriving in silos. That's just the way the system has been over the years. And we are looking at ways to knock down those silos so we can actually see each other and speak to each other and engage with each other and support each other. And I think the last thing I'll touch upon it, the fact is school climate and school culture are two of the most important things. And I think universally, they've probably been neglected because you're trying to get to the end of the day, to the end of the week, and then rinsing, repeating that throughout the 10 months within the school year. So to have a concerted effort as far as elevating the school climate and the school culture to be more kind, to be more compassionate, and to make sure that we bring in professional development for our staff. So not to learn how to be kind, but to, you know, re-engage in some ways to reinforce ways we can do it for each other and for, most importantly, for our kids.
Yeah. So when you talk about climate and culture, you're speaking my language. When you talk about kindness, you're speaking my language. When you talk about coming together, bringing everyone together and creating a sense of community, and we're all in it together, you're speaking my language. And when you talk about taking care of yourself, you're speaking my language, because I think I saw you quoting the adage somewhere, you can't pour from an empty cup. And you just can't. You have to constantly be restoring yourself. And it's almost akin to the dehydration levels we've all experienced this summer during this incredible heat wave. You have to constantly be drinking water because you need more water because you're losing more water because it's so hot. And like that, we were getting rapidly defueled last year and we just needed to constantly refresh ourselves. We just weren't used to that regimen or progression of need and what that meant for us. And the other thing is that when people think of self-care, they think about, oh my gosh, now you want me to do this. You want me to drink herbal tea. You want me to take time. I don't have time for all this self-care nonsense. But it's really a matter of building it into your daily life. As Thich Nhat Hanh said, the purpose of washing the dishes is to wash the dishes, not to get them clean. And you have to tend to yourself during the day-to-day and find a way to make those self-care moments for yourself. So I love where you're going with that, and I anticipate your staff will too. And actually, what you were just talking about is a great segue to my next question, which is about your TED Talk on peas. The TED Talk was entitled, Why Peas Are the Key to a Successful Education. And you explained that peas, P-E-A-S, stood for physical, emotional, academic, and social as four aspects of education. Now this, I think, is where schools have lost their bearings. And there's been this over-focus on the academic realm and maybe interscholastic sports. So it's been all about academic achievement, sports achievement. Let's win that state championship. Let's see how many kids can get into this many colleges, etc. But you've talked about how we need to restore the balance between the physical, emotional, academic, and social at schools. So I wonder if you can share some of your ideas on the P's and tie it in maybe to the mental health crisis that we're all dealing with and have been dealing with since we've been back.
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate you bringing up that TED Talk. I think like 25 people have seen it, so I appreciate that.
26.
Thank you. In all seriousness, you know, and I speak about this at the end of the talk, is that the pendulum, the education system, we're on a pendulum, has swung in so far in one direction. You know, the question is, how do we bring it back? How do we bring it back in the middle somewhere, not to the other side of the spectrum? When I visit or when I research other schools internationally, not just in New York, not just, you know, in the Midwest or out West, all over, and you look at universal best practices, there are just a few things that are common within those systems. One is, how do we have students flourish, not just in academics, but once they leave the actual system? And I speak about the fact that we have kids for 14,000 hours. And when you think about that, 14,000 hours for a very long time, 13 years, the question becomes, what is the actual purpose of education? Why are we here, aside from the fact that it's compulsory education, they have to be here, you know, until a certain age? But the question should be asked often each year, maybe multiple times per year, like, why are we here and what are we doing? It's certainly not just to make sure kids are receiving high test scores. I'm not saying it's not important, but that it should not be what gets us up in the morning. And for many systems, it is. In many ways, they pride themselves on that. So the question becomes, how do we become more balanced? Like in life, it's important to become balanced. And like any system that's out of whack, at some point, it's going to derail and it's not going to function and be as efficient and effective as it can be. So if we focus on those four things, you know, physical, emotional, academic, and social every single day, and it's not like, you know, well, it's time to teach about physical stuff. And then like 2 hours later, oh, it's time to teach about social stuff. That's not the way it is. It's all integrated. It's all interconnected. And you provide opportunities for kids. And by the way, not just elementary kids, middle school kids definitely need it. And certainly high school kids need this as well. And so how do you A, have people believe that this is important? And then B, how do you execute that? And how do you move that forward? When I was in Finland, I know you mentioned this before, I was really taken aback. First of all, it's incredibly high performing. But second of all, the elementary kids and the middle school kids, for that matter, take multiple breaks throughout the day. And when I say multiple breaks, like they're outside multiple times. However, by the time they're in third grade, they're speaking three different languages. The school day is shorter, the school year, the school day. So how the heck are they taking all this stuff, compressing it, and students are flourishing once they leave? And how can we take those things and tease them out? And the fact of the matter is they don't segregate and they don't separate kids. They put them all together. There are no special education classes. And that's no disrespect to special education, because I love it very much, but you're all part of one group. Everybody is together. So when I talk about P's and I talk about everything else, it's all about how do we focus on what's most important. And I think the question, Chris, is never asked, how are our kids doing 10 years after they leave the system? What metrics, what systems do we have in place to actually showcase and show the fact that we were successful for the 13 years they were here? We really don't do that. We look at, you know, what's the percentage of kids who go to college? That's not the only metric for success. I know students who went to Harvard, who went to the Ivies, sub-Ivies. 15 years later, they are miserable. They're making a lot of money. They don't know how to live life. And so that should be what gets us up in the morning. It's once they leave here, have they maximized their potential? Do they know what their talents are? And are they flourishing in life and the things that are most important? That is what we should focus on. And that's why mental health, that's why your own physical health is incredibly important. And nutrition, by the way, which is something that's incredibly overlooked too. I just went on for about 10 minutes. All right, so I'm off my soapbox.
First of all, that was a fantastic explanation of how to weigh what's really important. Secondly, one of our listeners just commented that it's all about integration, putting all the elements of learning together. Because here's another Ken Robinson thing. He talked about how our schools are designed like factories. And that's how everything got divided into separate subjects and separate periods. And that's why we have bells ringing to signal the beginning and the end of each period. Because really, back then, we were preparing people to go work in factories. We don't have factories today the way we had factories. If we have factories, the factories have robots, and we need to program the robots. We need to understand AI. We need to understand machine learning. All this high-level stuff. So we're not preparing people anymore for menial work. And that whole idea of flourishing, in your TED talk, you talk about ending up like John Bender from The Breakfast Club and about your light bulb going out and that you want people's light bulbs to be burning bright when they leave school. You want them to feel inspired and ready to take things on. We're supposed to be preparing kids for the world, which is the way I always thought about it. We have to get kids ready for the world. And too many of us think we need to get the world ready for our kids, that we need to create all these structures and make sure all these things are in place so they shouldn't have to feel stress or challenged or experience any difficulty. Because in life, there's going to be stress and challenge. But if you're flourishing, then you're ready for the stress and challenge, because all of that is a fact of life.
You know, Chris, if I could just, you know, for those who are listening, Marty Seligman, who is a pretty famous psychologist at a UPenn, wrote a book about flourishing. It's called Flourish, ironically enough. And I recommend, highly recommend that, because, you know, as school systems and other organizations, you design backwards. You design backwards from where you want to be, right? And you bring it back to the baseline. Ultimately, for me, it's about flourishing, not just for our students, but for our staff. And here in Port Washington, our teachers are really second to none. I really do mean that. And I need to tell them more. But they just are. And not just the teachers, all the staff members, you know, from social workers to psychologists to custodians, everybody. We're very fortunate. And I want to the best of my ability, make sure that they are okay and taken care of. And for them and for our students and our parents to understand that the end game isn't always an A. It's always about being better than what we were yesterday in any, you know, way, shape, or form. The last thing I just want to say too, Chris, before I forget, is the importance of learning how to check our emotions, because usually when our emotions hijack us, it's very difficult for us to flourish. You know, and the question becomes, what systems can we put in place to help our staff and help our students understand how they can recalibrate when they're about to have, I would say, a solar flare, like something happens, you know, they had that solar flare inside, the amygdala goes crazy, it hijacks your system. And how do you reel it back in? How do you have those tools in your tool belt to do that? And that's something I think the pandemic has really exacerbated in many ways, is that we've always had, at least at this point, as Peter Gray would say, serving students who are more anxious, depressed, and suicidal than any generation before. But I would take that and I would take it and actually apply that to the staff that has been serving kids around the nation and internationally. They are too. And so what can we do to assist them? That's in the forefront of my mind this year as we move forward.
Yeah. So in some sense, we've experienced a collective trauma. The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk spoke extensively about how trauma changes the brain. And it really does get that amygdala and the whole limbic system activated. The amygdala are like our little smoke detectors. And these little smoke detectors are going off all the time, and that's got us hijacked. We also, as human beings, are wired for connection. We're wired to read off each other and feel and empathize with each other. And so, in a classroom, when you have dysregulated children, you will have dysregulated teachers too. And if you have dysregulated teachers, you're going to have dysregulated children too. Because we learn to regulate and co-regulate in infancy. In a good parent-child relationship, the infant learns to regulate by co-regulating with the parents or the caregiver. So when our caregivers are stressed and our kids are stressed, it's a recipe for everybody being stressed. And it's difficult. So I'd like to dive into that idea a little bit more, you know, about regulation and what staff needs. But before I get to that, I want to address something you said before. You talked about the importance of getting everybody on board. You have to get everybody on board with that idea of balance. So what are your ideas about how we can get more school leaders, more boards, more parents on board with this idea that we need more balance? You need kids to go outside and play and have joyful experiences. Because, by the way, those are also tried and true practices for trauma care. Play, joy, harmony, rhythm, doing things together, dancing, singing. These are all things that people do together to regulate themselves and to recover. So what are your thoughts on getting people on board?
Yeah, listen, you know, that's probably one of the hardest things. I usually say it's hard enough to change your mind, but change somebody else's mind is about 10 times as hard to do, for sure. And so what I try to do, well, first of all, I try to model to the best of my ability. It doesn't work all the time, but you have to walk the walk if you're going to be saying such things, right? So you have to be authentic and you have to be real. And that's why the relationships really come into play, because it certainly supports that. The second is the research behind all the things that you just said. It is not rocket science to show how important those things are. So what I try to do is share either literature, books, TED Talks, whatever it may be, to support from a scientific standpoint why those things are so important. And then finally, it's really asking the question, and some people don't like the answer, is what we're doing working, and how do we know that? How do you know what we're actually doing and doing every single year working? And if it is working, is it working as well as it can or as it should? In my previous district, you may know, I doubled recess. And as simple and as silly as that sounds, the fact that it made the news is frightening. It really is. It's like, so what's the headline? Kids are playing? Let's put it on the news. Like, that just shows you how out of whack as a society as we are, that it's actually newsworthy to have kids play for more than 20 minutes a day. If you look around nationally, Chris, there are only, I want to say now, 7 or 8 states that actually mandate recess within schools. So not only is it a local problem, it's a national problem. And again, it's pointing to countries that are, you know, not, again, not just the United States, showing exemplars. That's how you do it too. Looking at systems that are successful, whether it's micro, whether it's macro. not to give it a quick lesson, but I will. The PISA scores, the Program for International Student Achievement, right, which is an international benchmark of assessments for kids in science and language. When it started in 2000, the PISA assessments for 15-year-olds, they looked at, you know, countries, you know, nationally. And Finland and some of the other Nordic countries were near the top. And by the way, what got them up in the morning was not to take the PISA test and to make sure that they were number one. It was quite the opposite. And when you see how they go about their day, and people are going to say, well, Finland is, you know, it's not really diverse and it's very small. Well, then take a state like New York, which is almost, you know, the same size and almost the same type of population, because it's a lot more diverse than what people think. First of all, if you look at the curriculum, Chris, if you look at the curriculum guide, it's like this. I have it in the back of my office. If I printed out New York State standards, it would fill up my office and probably it's crazy. And so we take 20 pounds of stuff and shove it in a 5-pound bag. And we've been doing that for years. And I think teachers would agree with this. And I know certainly that parents may agree with this. I know I agree with it because I believe it. Less is more. We need to do less and actually dig deeper into what we're doing as opposed to a scratch and sniff and only go down like a half an inch. That is part of the problem. And when I show people, you know, how these things work, then I want them to try it. One of the things, Chris, that a lot of people are frightened to do is take risks in the classroom, take risks as a system, because they feel like they're going to get their hands slapped or they're going to get in trouble. And so we have to employ and make sure that we share with our staff and with our students that failing is okay, trying things over and over again is okay, and actually you grow more when you do those things. And then to show the research behind why it is important to do such things. So that's the way I try to go about it. It's organic. There isn't like a checklist that one goes through and says, first do this, then do that. But you have to have the right people on the bus. And at this point, I think in Port Washington, we definitely do.
So many things came through my mind as you were talking. I was reminded of when I was a New York City teacher back in the 80s. Back then, we were using this math program called The Sims. And your fourth grade math program was in a binder that was about 4 inches thick. And there was a lesson for each of the 180 days of the year. And your job as teacher was to keep up with the pace of those 180 days. And this, of course, did not speak to the fact that in my classroom, I had a handful of kids reading on grade level. I had the majority of my class reading 2 years below grade level. And then I had a significant handful of kids who were non-readers. And so that affected math. And obviously, it affected reading. It affected everything we did. And all the students were together in one place. We all had to figure out a way, but it wasn't going to be this teacher-proof formula that I was going to robotically go through this enormous book that I couldn't ever have gotten through in the first place. So that's important. And then in terms of recess, just in terms of some of the research, I was going to ask you about what you do, where you go for support. I know one place you go is to research, and you go to some really good thinkers. You've clearly read and you're constantly looking at the latest research for new ideas. I hear it in what you're saying. And one of my favorite neuroscientists is Andrew Huberman from Stanford. I love him. His podcast. Oh, you're nodding. Amazing. I found him on Rich Roll and then I started listening to him. He talks about the importance of random breaks through the day. If you really want to learn something, take breaks. And this actually helps you learn. Grinding it out doesn't help you learn. Grinding it out helps you feel overwhelmed. So, you know, we've got this grinding thing down. We all know how to grind. And what we do is when we feel like, oh, it's not working, what do I have to do? Oh, I've got to grind harder. I've got to work harder. It's just not the answer. So all that you just said about recess and about play and about breaks is crucial.
Chris, I want to be clear too, because to some, it seems like we're not pushing kids hard enough if we do those things. It almost means for some people that we don't really care about academics. I'm not saying here in Port Washington, I'm saying in a lot of places that they feel if you're allowing kids to go outside and do things that are unstructured, God forbid, then that means you're taking time out of the classroom where they're not learning whatever content area of the, you know, that should be taught at that time. And I think it's just the opposite. So I love the fact that you watch Rich Roll, first of all, who's a hero of mine. And then that he's amazing. And so he'll have neuroscientists on, he'll have all sorts of people on, but there's a common thread through all of them. And for me, it's about wellness. And ultimately, again, when you look at very successful systems, whether the business systems or educational systems, if we focus on wellness, you will have better output if that's what you care about. But so wellness within the system and focusing on your client, which is your staff, which is your students, which is your parents, you're going to just be in a much better place. And I do believe now is the time for school districts to recalibrate. We won't have a second chance. God, I hope we never have another pandemic, at least in my lifetime. However, now that this one is, I'm hoping, toward the end of this, the question becomes, what have we learned and what can we actually apply? Because if we go back to the way we were, that's the ultimate sin. And I don't want to see that in any system.
We can't. We actually can't go back to where we were. I read something somewhere. This was actually written in the 1920s in the wake of the flu pandemic that occurred, which was our last big one. And it said, pandemics are like portals. And once you go through that portal, you don't go back. You've come through the other side and you're in a different place now. It's just all going to be different. So we have to come to terms with the fact that the world is different. It has changed. Yeah, sure, we can restore some things and we can put some things back in place, but we can't put it all back in place like it never happened. And even if we were able to do that, it would be a terrible decision because we would be fundamentally unprepared for the next go-round. I want to get into staff a little bit with you, because you alluded to climate and culture, and you talked about staff, and staff understanding how to regulate. So I'm guessing that's one area. But what do you think about the role of mental health training for staff? What are your thoughts on what staff need most in terms of mental health training? What can they benefit from the most?
So one of the things I'm focusing on this year, you know, when I first started here in Port Washington, I started right before the pandemic. So I started in July, and then March, we know what happened. So my inability to forge the relationships as much as I could have and should have really took a major hit, because over the past, you know, the following 2 years, you're just putting out fires, making decisions that some people are happy about and some people aren't. And some of them really impacted staff, most notably teachers, when it came to live streaming and such. And it really, really hit me hard, because I pride myself on supporting staff and really embracing them and assisting them. And it was hard for me. And so to answer your question, what I am going to do is ask them what they think they need, as opposed to me actually thinking about that I know all the answers, because certainly I don't, whether I'm at home or certainly whether I'm here at work. So I want to know what they need, and then for us to design together what we can do to help support staff. And again, not just teachers, who are the lifeblood of our school and any school, but the clerical staff, the custodians, everybody else that touches the lives of kids. So that is something we're looking to do. And I'm going to partner with some of the union leadership and figure out ways to do that. But the first thing for me, Chris, is to reacquaint myself with the wonderful staff that we have. That's the first thing, and to make that my number one priority, staff and kids.
Yeah, I think as school leader, it's always good to think about your staff as learners. The origin of the word principal was principal teacher. The principal was the principal teacher, the main teacher in the building. And the superintendent is basically the main teacher of the district. And if you want to teach people something, you have to find out, so where are you? What do you already know? How are you feeling? What's going on with you? What do you need? You have to have them tell you what's getting in their way right now. And then you help them get the obstacles out of the way. And that's part of what facilitates the learning. So I think that's a terrific approach. We're coming to the end of our time. I really do wish we could stay on all day. I feel like I could talk to you all day. I've just enjoyed hearing your ideas. I love that we have some thinkers in common, and I definitely have to get that Seligman book on flourishing. That's on my list for today. But before we go, you have such a wealth of ideas. I just wonder if there's anything we haven't touched on today that you'd like to leave our listeners with in terms of preparing yourself for the year ahead.
You know, I think we touched on it already. It really is, and I'm hoping this, if there's any educators in the audience right now, and or parents for that matter, is that it is not selfish to take care of yourself. And I think there has been some labeling attached to taking you time, you know, because that means you're taking time away from your kids or from your spouse. I have told my leadership team here over and over, it's the one drum I keep beating all the time, is that please take care of yourself. And whatever I can do to support you in taking care of yourself, you know, please let me know. But that is the number one thing, because I believe if we really diligently take care of ourselves and spend a little bit of time each day, wake up maybe a little bit earlier, go for a walk in the morning, maybe wake up a little bit earlier and meditate for a few minutes, something, as Huberman would say, get some natural light, how important that is and what that does.
Have you tried that sunlight thing in the morning?
I've not tried that yet. No. But I'm going to.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at his diet, too, to try some of those things. He's saying no coffee for the first, hour and a half after you wake up.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that one.
But he's
strip right when I wake up. But that is the thing. It's the one thing I know for a fact. There are really no silver bullets in life, and certainly in education. But I think that's as close to one as far as you accelerating your journey to being joyful and to flourishing is taking time to focus on you first so you can take care of others. That to me is the most important thing.
Excellent. I think that is a great thought to leave people with. And obviously, in this year ahead, I think you said it at the outset, this year is really important. Last year, we were just trying to get to the finish line. This year, we've got to do some rebuilding. We've got to do some restructuring. We've got to do some rebalancing. And it starts with recentering ourselves. So hearing your ideas was really encouraging, and I hope it was encouraging to our audience. It's certainly encouraging to me to hear your ideas and have this conversation with you. And I'm hoping that other leaders are joining you in thinking in this way, because I think it's so crucial, so needed. I'm really happy to hear about what you've implemented and what you have planned for your staff. It's been so great having you on today, and I wish you all the best in the year ahead.
Thanks, Chris. You as well, and hopefully we'll cross paths again very soon. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and thanks everybody for listening. Have a great rest of your day.